regular meeting of the Governance Committee of the Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project. The minutes can please show that Rich Spindland is here representing Cal Am, and Bob Brower is here representing the Water Management District. I am representing the Water Authority, and the county does not have a representative this morning. We will turn to Pledge of Allegiance. Bob, if you could lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll now turn to public comment. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the Governance Committee on any item not on today's agenda, but within the jurisdiction of the Governance Committee. Michael.
Morning. I'm Michael Warburton, Executive Director of the Public Trust Alliance, one of the interveners in the various Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project proceedings before the California Public Utilities Commission. I'm making a statement today in the general public comment time of this meeting because I found that particular agenda items tend to be so narrowly defined that many fundamental public concerns appear irrelevant to the discussion. My major concern right now is that the desalinization project might have strayed dangerously far from the original goal of constructing a reasonable public water supply to meet the needs of Monterey Peninsula communities. I like the idea that we all join together to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag before this meeting. That has a way of reminding us that we're all really pretty small part of a bigger community with lofty ideals. While some of us might have woken up this morning on this side of the lettuce curtain, knowing that there's only one way for things to come down, at the end of the day, we're all Americans who know there's a way to do things without shooting our neighbors or subjecting them to various degrees of servitude. Been a part of our history, and I remember being truly moved a couple of months ago at the memorial service for Darby First at Asilomar. It was truly gratifying to learn how much one guy could contribute to his community over the years. But there's something that seems different about how this new water supply project is being pushed without adequate public discussion of reasonable alternatives. Even though California law requires the commission to consider broad public interests, the scope of public discussions is often confined to far narrower concerns. A lot of water is used every year in Monterey County, and a fundamental observation is that most of the public water supply goes to agriculture, and that a very small shift would completely solve the urban crisis. Usually it makes most sense to think of water supply challenges from the perspective of trying to be the most efficient in allocations at every point from the top to the bottom of the shared watershed. In this case, we seem to be thinking of how to make the most money from the bottom, where supplies are most contested and threatened by the impacts of rising sea level and saltwater intrusion. When coastal erosion is added to the mix, original engineering ambitions have to be mitigated. And we found that out. And I really think that this has, the whole discussion of this project has been a tragic waste of public resources and commitments to various communities here in Monterey County, and that that the public could be better served by a more general discussion of alternatives where solutions are most likely to be found. And I think there are a lot of things that need to be considered before desalinization of water. And that, I guess, brings us to the actual agenda item as it's defined, which is all about value engineering. But I'm concerned that the most basic value engineering problem of the entire water supply question has been organized out by the definition of the scope of this contract.
Thank you, Michael, for your comments. Would anyone else wish to address the governance committee during the public comment period? Seeing no one, I will close the public comment and thank you again, Michael, for both reminding us of why we're here and in our effort to serve the public. I'll say you've been quite consistent in making your point. I appreciate you making it again here this morning. We'll turn to action item one, which is consider approval of minutes for the committee meetings of March 31st, 2014. Let me see if there's any suggested edits from the governance committee. Let me open it to the public. Any member of the public wishing to comment on the minutes? Seeing none, and we'll bring it back. And I will note, I talked with Arlene in advance, that the way the minutes read, it might suggest that we take action before public comment. In fact, we take public comment and before taking action, and I've suggested that at least going forward that we just switch the order of how the minutes are written to reflect the actual order in which we work to conduct the meetings. Arlene, if you don't mind making that change to these minutes, and I'll entertain a motion for approval of the minutes with that.
With that change, I so move.
I'll second, and Callahan doesn't have any
doesn't have
a vote, so all in favor,
aye.
Passes unanimously. We'll move to item two, which is review and approve for distribution the draft request for proposal, RFP, for a contract to conduct value engineering analysis of CBM desalination project designs. I believe Jim, if you can provide a report on this. I will say just very briefly, we have taken this both to the Water Authority's Technical Advisory Committee and to the Water Authority itself for input, and we've made some minor changes based on that input, but we wanted to bring it also to the Governance Committee to make sure that we're headed in the right direction with this before we take it out to the street, but Jim can add to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I don't want to spend too much time going over this, and hopefully it's fairly self-explanatory. We'll note that both Dave and myself got together after the last governance committee to determine which of the two organizations could move the most expeditiously to try to get this VEL street consistent with the schedule that Cal-Am originally had, so we keep everything moving forward on schedule. At that time, it was determined that the Water Authority, with the meeting coming up, was in the best position to go ahead and move forward and actually take over the contracting. However, we'll work together, staff-wise and otherwise, to as well as with Cal-Am, to make sure that we get an appropriate review committee, and that assuming that the governance committee approves the RFP, I'm hoping to get this out on the street tomorrow, and that will be the better part of 3 weeks for proposers to get back in, and there'll be a committee, as I mentioned, formed of several of the engineering staff within the community to review those proposals, come back with a recommendation as to the best consultant, and using the qualification-based selection process that we usually use for governmental organizations, and then bring it back to the authority and take it back to the governance committee first, and then the authority for selection. Just one note, the major change that I made to what was the technical draft that was provided by Cal-Am is that I had adjusted it to include what was my best judgment at the time as to those issues that were of importance to the public and the authorities had expressed at Water Authority meetings. In addition, I included a contract, which is basically the contract we use for public contracting, as opposed to how Cal-Am would do it. So that's what's in the package. And when it went to the TAC and went to the authority, as was noted by Mayor Burnett, there were some changes made in order to make sure it was consistent with what the Water Authority and TAC were viewing as in the best public interest for the VE. And that's what's before you now in terms of the RFP and the scope of work, as well as the contract that we intend to use. So any questions of the committee?
Any questions?
No.
I'll note that we are working on an addendum to the governance committee agreement itself to codify the modified arrangement here. And I've seen that there's been some drafts going back and forth between the Water Authority and Cal-Am, and those notice will be distributed to all four parties of the governance committee for their consideration.
Now, there's just one other item I should have mentioned. I have a not to exceed estimate of $200,000. That should be more than enough to study what I need to do that. Reason for that is I had to get that $200,000 onto the water authority budget, and then get that approved. So we made sure that we had a number in there that was going to be more than adequate to meet our contracting responsibilities as water authority, yet still be able to get reimbursed within the current fiscal year from Cal-Am. So that number, we hope, will be a lot less than that dollar amount, but that's a not to exceed number.
Thank you, Jim, for that report, and thank you for all the work that you've been putting into this. Let me open it to the public. Any member of the public wish to address the governance committee on the topic of the RFP? Jeannie.
Jeannie Byrne with the Water Management District. And I make these comments and actually would like some response only because Bob and I seem to have, I thought I was going to be sitting there, and he is, and whatever.
You two work that out.
Lack of coordination.
Apparently we have some schedule issues.
So on the first page, I was glad to see the life cycle costing was included in there. Because I think it's important that we're considering not only short-term cost savings, but actual long-term cost savings.
The first page of the RFP, the attachment
right.
one?
Right.
Okay.
I was a little surprised at the last meeting to learn that the wells are only good for 20 to 30 years. It seems maybe a little short, but I guess the point being, is there an approval process once you have to redrill those wells? So, and how does that figure into the total cost of the project? On the second page of the RFP, there was two bullet points referring to the Silver Award for sustainable infrastructure and also LEED Silver Award. Unless you're actually going to go through the expensive process of actually applying for those awards, it seems that there is some issue with how much time you want somebody to spend making sure those are included, because I thought the original project was supposed to include those. But I have a real issue that it be firmly noted that any expense in going after those awards are the shareholders' problem, not the ratepayers. This should never be the ratepayers' expense, because those two items are very expensive. And there's other reference to LEED, et cetera, down further in the project. The $200,000 maximum, I would want to know what the expectation is in terms of return on those dollars. So we're not just simply spending money because we said we would. So is the return double what you spend? Is it anticipated that it's 10 times what you spend? There needs to be some sort of return on investment on what this value engineering is actually going to produce. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Would anyone else wish to address the governance committee on this item? Michael. And Jeannie, we'll work to address each of your points when we close the public comment.
Michael Warburton with the Public Trust Alliance. As I said before, the scope of this value engineering contract makes it practically meaningless in terms of meeting the public interest, because it looks at one technical alternative for doing a project, and the essential value engineering decision of whether desalinization technology or another technology should be used to meet public needs is the far greater one. And like many of the other decisions that have been made, the time to keep on schedule with a defined project has defined the public discussion from the very start. And any expenditure of public money on this study is a waste of public resources.
Thank you, Michael, for your comments. Would anyone else wish to address the governance committee on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public comment, bring it back. Let me actually read an email that I received from Rich Persoff, who's the director of Division B of, I guess, Paparo Valley WMA.
Yep. Water Management.
Water Management Agency. He attended the previous governance committee meeting and offered some thoughts. Let me just summarize those in the context of public comment. He asks whether the standard one-week process provided for here gives sufficient time to review fundamental questions such as what do we want this project to do? Is it essential now? What are the interests that it will benefit or injure? Quote, although some of these have been touched on during staff presentations and when policy decisions were being made, important needs may have shifted while the project was being designed. It's actually similar to Michael's point in terms of the scope of value engineering. Second point that Mr. Persoff makes is also with respect to the one-week period, offering limited time, scant time to build trust between the parties and reviewing the engineers, allowing the reviewing engineers to become familiar with the overall project. Obvious weaknesses may be discovered, but more basic conditions may not have been considered, he states. Asking whether it allows enough time for the question of whether the technology, is the technology old and traditional or modern, more modern approaches feasible. And then he states that it's his hunch that the reviewing firms may not wish to expose major deficiencies in the designer's project, so although they'll find enough $100,000 improvements to justify their involvement. And then he asks whether the value engineering review will address foreseeable but unquantifiable difficulties from weather, unlikely catastrophes, changes in social or economic or climate conditions. And he asked if something cannot be costed, will its effect be estimated, or will it be left out of the analysis? So just wanted to read those questions into the record of the chair with the rest of the governance committee. Let's go through, first take up Jeannie's questions. First of all, she I think it was more a comment, was appreciative that the life cycle cost was included, so it's not just initial cost, but it's the full, presumably a net present value cost, such that it would include both capital and operating costs. Jeannie, were you suggesting any edits there, or emphasize that point?
Just emphasize that it's not only short-term cost, but it's long-term life cycle.
Okay. On the second page, by the way, I think there's a typo. It should be lead, not with a... Right, the lead rating system. But Jeannie's point was a couple-fold. One is wondering, in fact, how much we want to push for the design to obtain lead, given the costs associated with that. And if there are costs associated with that, she made the argument that the shareholders, not the ratepayers, should pay that incremental cost. I think that we had in the governance committee agreement itself,
I thought there was something in there that said that the project would not pursue that unless CalM wanted to do that on their own.
My recollection on this is that we were going for lead-like type of things, but not going for the actual awards.
Certification.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So maybe the word attain a silver award level of design. So it's the level of design would be at the lead level, but we wouldn't necessarily apply for lead. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. Just underscoring that.
Okay.
Because if you evaluate it, there's a tendency to do it.
Right.
I hate to say that.
Right.
That's true.
Right. Next, she asked whether there's any estimate or expectation in terms of the return on investment, if we're talking about a sizable investment, whether it's $100,000 or $200,000, sizable, is there some rule of thumb that can be provided? Of course, we don't know today what the value engineering will produce in this case, but is there a track record in terms of these types of value engineering exercises? What types of improvements to the overall value are likely found?
Well, at least I'll speak from my experience. We've always recovered the cost of the value engineering study. That's pretty safe. Now, is it a multiple of 10? Probably not. It could be, but sometimes what you're doing with the value engineering study is you're changing the risk profile a little bit, right? So you have to decide, is that the risk you want to go down? For example, the value engineering team could say, let's drop pretreatment again.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, that's a $14 million roughly change. Yes, that could be beneficial to the project, but then there's risk with that, right? We certainly know from the water quality data we obtained on the boreholes that we have iron and manganese issues. So we wouldn't want to take that risk. But maybe the group of experts could say, hey, there's other ways to handle that. And we'd be willing to listen to that. I mean, we're certainly open to listen to some of those discussions. But there's no doubt they'll find 100,000 here, 100,000 there. That's pretty common. And we'll definitely recoup the investment in that value engineering study. I'm pretty confident of that.
Dave or Rich, either of you have experience with value engineering or could help to answer Jamie's question in this regard?
Well, it kind of goes to the comment that was made earlier, but oftentimes you don't get large-scale design flaws revealed throwing a colleague under the bus, so some of the potential for return often goes overlooked, I've found.
Mm-hmm.
But you typically get a whole slew of little ones that add up, and you do get a return. I mean, I don't think we're going to spend $200,000 on it to begin with, and you're going to find probably a whole list of little 100,000s here and so forth. So you'll get some benefit.
Okay. I believe that those were the questions, Jeannie. Did we cover them? Then with respect to the scope of the value engineering contract, a point that Michael Warburton made, I think that he's correct that the scope is limited to this project, and that the venue where broader alternatives are being analyzed is the Public Utility Commission's EIR, and that under CEQA they are looking at alternatives beyond what the value engineering process will look at. So I think it's a fair point. It's accurate in terms of where we are in the process. Now, with respect to Mr. Persoff's points, what about the question of whether a one-week process allows sufficient time to ask the level of questions that we want to be asked here?
And I'm making sure I understand the context right. He's saying the way we laid the schedule out, that the people on the panel, the value engineering panel, would only have the design for a week, and he thinks they need more time. Is that the context?
Well, all I have is his email,
okay,
so I have not talked with him.
Okay, because I wasn't at the last meeting, so I haven't thought of it. But let me at least, because I've been on a couple of value engineering teams, and generally you're retaining experts to come on the team who have experience doing this. And really, they know what they're looking for, right? So when they get that set of drawings and they can spend diligent time over that week, they'll know right off the bat what some of their ideas are. Yeah, I mean, certainly a little bit more time is not going to hurt, but certainly an expert who knows this area, for instance, you know, the FBI folks, they know DSAL as good as anyone in the state. So they're going to be able to comment on things right off the bat and provide some sufficient coverage.
So can you remind me, or maybe it's in the RFP, but when will the 30% design documents be provided to the value engineering team, and how long will they have to do their homework before they get together on the week of the 23rd through the 27th?
Yeah.
Ian does it. Okay, great. Thank you.
Hey, hi, Ian Chris. The idea is to get approval for the value engineer in May for governance committee. The basis of the design report will be finished here next week. We're going to review it. So they'll have by the time it's approved, the value engineers will have a basis of design report and the 30% plans before we meet again. We'll have it in the beginning of June.
Okay, so they would have it for 3 weeks before.
2 to 3 weeks.
A couple weeks before getting it. And then the other, and this is actually similar to what Dave Stolt mentioned, is that there may be, value engineering may be set up in such a way that you find, you tend to find smaller improvements and you, for reasons that I guess I don't fully understand, but I'd like to understand better, why are the larger improvements possibly not?
I shouldn't characterize it like that. Occasionally you'll have somebody that has just a different design concept for whatever reason, and they may think that theirs is the better way, or what they've seen is the better way, but then they'll look at what's being done and say, well, no, it can be done that way. And so rather than go down that path of trying to really shift the thinking of the design firm, they'll work with what's out there and then work on all the other little pieces. I don't know if you've had that experience. We had a very large project about 9 years ago, not here, but that was involved in. And kind of upon further review, if it had been done the way that other firm had done it, probably would have been, you know, $2.5-3 million cheaper on a $21 million project. And there's just stuff like that that pops up. And to others who looked at it, it was like, it was obvious to one firm, but not the value engineering firm. Stuff like that happens. But they found about $1.5 million of other stuff that came out of it. So it was good.
Is there any change to how we could either do the RFP or design the process itself that would more likely elicit the
No, I think it just goes to your pool of firms and their commitment to their own capabilities. And I think we have the right firms to get the right answers.
I think there is a sense of professional courtesy where somebody's not going to come in and just simply say, well, I don't like your design because I like mine better. You know, it becomes kind of a push and shove, even though maybe in reality at the end of the day, the second option would be better.
The other design was better.
Yeah, but, you know.
Well, maybe can I add to that? So I've been involved in one where we took the second design and it ultimately didn't work. So it could go both ways. And I'll tell you the story real quick just because it's fascinating, but it was a wastewater treatment plant that they were having to do nitrogen and phosphorus removal. We had planned on a biological process. In the value engineering study, they said, no, just change your diffuser outfall into the river, and then you don't have to do the biological removal process at all. So you just cut all that out. It was like a 20% reduction of the project cost. And so we went down that path, and then ultimately the regulator said, no, we don't want a diffuser option. We want truly what you're going to do. So, the key is to have ideas brought up and have a lively debate about all those different ideas so that everyone can then look at them and say, what's best for the project? And that's really what you want. You want a team that's going to come up with ideas. And that's what the facilitator should encourage out of all the participants.
Yeah, I agree. I guess my big thing is that it's timely that we do this, and for the amount of dollars that's spent over a project of this size, I think it should be strongly supported. So I'll make a motion to approve.
Great. I will second it. And actually, before we conclude, let me just two other points that Rich first off made is how unquantifiable challenges such as weather or other catastrophes, social, economic, climatic conditions. And adding on to that, if something can't be costed, how is it incorporated into value engineering? It would be my assumption or hope that that it's not all, that you don't only look at factors that can be quantified and monetized, but there's also an assessment of risk and other implications. I'm seeing nodding heads from Jim in particular. So long as that is the understanding of how this will move forward, is that noted in here?
Well, I think part of it goes back to you when you get quotes. I mean, they're going to talk about their experience and the accomplishments of the VE firm in the past, and Paul, that's going to address the whole question of how to make it a better project. It's great if you're going to make it cheaper. We always kind of assume VE is going to make it cheaper, but you also want to make it better. And part of being better is eliminate things that are going to prevent you from delivery on time, or create situations where you have long, you've spec long lead time components, for example, which might be a superior component, but could take 3 or 4 years to get. Or once you get it, you can't fix it.
Right.
They may come in with things that have a lower risk, even if they may not be ideal.
Right. Okay. Okay. If there's not any further discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you, Jim. So we look forward to this hitting the street shortly. We'll turn to item 3, which is receive a report from Cal-Am on contingency source water intake locations and develop recommendation on future action regarding source water intakes. Just as a reminder, this was brought to the Governance Committee at the last meeting. The Governance Committee had questions about a more detailed assessment of the costs involved in permitting and the timeline of those costs, and I believe that Ian will work to answer those questions.
Yeah. Thanks. I'll quickly step through this. So if you can go to the next slide. I showed this slide at the last meeting, and this is just some of the benefits of Shara Road as a consideration for the ultimate longer-term production wells and test well. Shara Road, environmentally, is a disturbed site. It's close to the ocean. It's actually closer than Cemex. It is located behind the dunes, and we have significant buffer from habitat. Hydrogeologically, Shara Road is also well-suited for slant wells. It has a good dune sand-like aquifer. It has a defined aquitard, and we have significant presence of ocean water through the borehole testing that we did. And it also, the sand in the aquifer there has great transmissivity to fill up the pipelines. Some of the negatives is that it's farther. It's about 38,000 feet up the road from the water plant site, the desal plant site, but it's a net of about 21,000 if you take away the Cemex pipe if we ultimately had to go up there. So it's about a net of 21,000 feet of additional pipe, maybe a $12 to $16 million cost. And there's a lot of complexities with going up there. We have two river crossings, we have bridge crossings, we have highway crossings. So that's why some of those costs are a little high. But that's so we have some challenges as well. So this is more pertains to what you guys had requested at the last meeting. At the top is the timeline that you've seen before, and that is works better for me. So you can see this timeline here. This is Marina. We plan to get through the report at the end of April, get it out to public day review in May, finalize report in June, and get all the way through Marina through the Planning Commission and Council by August, and then by October, hopefully have Coastal Commission approval. Well, during that time, if we pursue Pechero as a contingency permitting option, this is roughly the timeline we would be looking at to finish that permitting. And so you would have a Coastal Commission potential approval by February of 15. As you can see, I put across the top the spend, 50. And so you would see here in August, if we had Marina approval in August, we would have incurred about 150,000 K by then. And you can see the spend rate after that if we have a different timeline where we either do, cancel or continue with the project. But again, it's a low amount of spend for the options it provides to the project. So I think that covers it. Next slide, please. This shows the same thing on the overall project schedule. What I did was I put here the Pechero timeline at the bottom of what is now the Cemex timeline, and you can see what happens. Again, Coastal Commission approval on Cemex in August, we'd be about $180K, to spend on permitting, and then, but what it provides us, though, is if we do conclude this permitting, if we have troubles here getting this slant well, we always have an option to move forward with Potrero test well, because we don't have a, potentially, we don't have a snowy plover issue at Potrero, and it will allow us year-round construction. So that's all I have, and I can, real quick, I'll show you one thing if you can. Next slide, please. I just wanted to show you, if you haven't been there, real quick, this is what the site looks like. You drive out, here's Potrero Road coming out to the, we would be coming down here with electric. But then if you look south, here's a dirt parking lot. This is where we drilled the borehole in the back corner. These are the dunes across the front. You can see the protection from the beach. This is about 400, 300 feet away and from the beach, that is. And this is looking north, and this is looking down the road. So I thought I'd just give you a little perspective of what it looks like. So, any questions?
Thank you, Ian. Any questions for Ian at this point? Let me open it to the public. Any member of the public wish to address the topic of contingent permitting for an alternative testable site?
Michael, we're working with Public Trust Alliance. Scope of contingencies is, again, a problem here. That these contingencies are very expensive. I mean, the cost, you know, is substantial for the people who will be paying for it. And if we're talking about source water, I guess it was discussed, the county discussed it in the context of a personnel evaluation, but there was 169,000 acre feet of water that already belongs to the public. That might strike the public as potential source water for water supply on the Monterey Peninsula. And legally it is. And once again, I think the scope of the contingency evaluation is so narrow that it can only be seen as a phenomenal waste of public resources, and that we should really be thinking about adjusting this project responsibly.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. And Dave Stoll, Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. A couple questions for Ian, or maybe Rich. Actually, Ian, one, on what plans you're looking at commercial. The question is the CMEX capacity unlimited, so as you replace wells, if CMEX is permitted, is there sufficient land area to do all the well replacements for 100 years of well needs? And then second question is there any risk due to transmissivity or hydrogeological features of the CMEX site that you might need additional water, and your choices would either be to go to the 180-foot aquifer or bring in Potrero Road as a backup site?
I'll let it go and I'll add.
Okay.
How's that?
maybe it's better Rich does. He's better at the high level. So. Both of those points are well taken, Dave, and there's some that we are looking at and considering in the overall scope. Is we don't know yet, right? We have to do a test well, but this certainly helps mitigate those concerns down the road. If we do are successful at some accident, we do have trouble there. We'd have a Potrero Road permit and ready to go. As far as land area, that's another reason that Potrero has helps, because longer term, you could potentially need another site to put the slant wells. So all this is a consideration.
Yes. So, I mean, currently we're working with CEMEX Corporation on how to lay out the wells, and we believe we're we're gonna obtain enough land to do replacement wells, and if the coastal erosion happens, we'll be retreating inland, so our fingers would be, you know, kind of moving underneath as we move back, so there's plenty of room for that. Okay, but we're trying to buy enough land kind of north and south, if you will, within the active mining area to not only have the pods we need, what we believe we need now, we won't know until we have a test well, but there's space for another pod. So we think we've got that covered. Now, we're staying south of the outfall for the most part, because Cemex has said we don't want you north of the outfall. And we're abiding by that. If for whatever reason, 30 years from now, Cemex is not doing what they're doing and their mining permits are expired, then there would be more land on the north side, and that would still be part of that disturbed area of the mining area. So that's, you know, potentially out there, but you know, we're trying not to go there. We want to make everything work on the south side. We have this group of hydrogeologists working together, and we actually have a meeting this afternoon to talk about some of the reviews of what they're seeing. And I don't want to get in front of what they're saying, but they're basically kind of saying there's no 180 in that area. It's one big massive pile of sand. And so I can't say that we're going to go deeper to the 180. We're just going to try to get the water that has no impact to the inland users. That's really the goal of the project. That's always been the goal. Now at Cemex, Petrero Road, one of the options I do like, and you know, and Mary Burnett knows, I've been on the record saying I don't want to pursue two different intake options, but those comments were driven more towards open ocean intake versus a subsurface intake, because I think that's where you get to a stalemate where you can't get any agency to move forward. But we're still looking for two subsurface intake options, and I like having this contingency plan. But Potrero has a very clear, defined aquitard. And so there's no question of it. The water quality that we showed, everything above it was very, very salty, 35,000. Everything below it was very, very fresh. And so it's kind of almost like a slam dunk that we're not going to have the same level of impact or potential impacts. So we need to keep that option in play. And that's really what we're asking for. You know, our commitment from Cal-Am bringing this to the governance committee is that this has the potential to be, you know, a fairly expensive ad. And, you know, part of the governance committee agreement is that we're going to let you guys know if there's anything over $1 million. We're not anywhere near that number yet, but it could be. And certainly I think if the committee would want updates as we move forward through the process on the Potrero Road site, we'd be willing to do that. Just to let you know, here's where we are. You know, we're this far along, we spent this much money. We're open to doing those things.
Okay. Well, I just want to add that the district generally supports it, and I like Ian's answers better because it's more consistent with our supporting it. But I do think that you have the chance of qualifying a contingency early on while you're doing this kind of work. I think that's wise.
Let me see. I think I still have it open for public comment. Any other members of the public wish to address the governance committee on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public comment and bring it back. And I will start by just noting from testimony that the Water Authority submitted last April of 2013, one of our eight conditions, this was before we worked out the settlement agreement with Cal-Am, was that Cal-Am, and I'll just read, quote, Cal-Am must continue to explore and advance alternative intake strategies as a contingency if Cal-Am's proposed intake wells prove legally or technically infeasible. Cal-Am must fully develop a contingency plan or plans and implement that plan or those plans for source water that do not involve wells in the Salinas Basin. This must be done concurrently along with Cal-Am planning and testing of proposed slant wells. So the Water Authority has long been on the record saying that, in part because this is likely the greatest risk that this project faces, the intake source, that we do support and we do recognize that this contingency planning does cost something, but we think that that's a wise investment given the risk involved.
Yeah, I was going to say, given the number of projects that the Peninsula has looked at over the years, and going down just the sole road on anything, I don't believe makes good sense. So I think having contingencies are smart, good business, and particularly when it comes to the source of water. So I'm certainly prepared to support this.
Okay, you want to make a motion to that effect?
I will so make a motion.
Okay. I will second that. Just to be clear, what is the
we're in support of continuing the secondary source of water intake at Potrero Road.
Okay. Very good. And any further discussion on that? motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. We will turn next to discussion of items to be placed on future agenda items. We'll note that we do have the when the selection of or the award of the RFP contract will come back to the governance committee in May.
Okay. I think it's on your, you already have an agenda on that, I think, right?
Yeah, but I believe we're working to schedule that meeting, or maybe it's already been scheduled.
No, we have, that date has been sent.
Okay.
It's May 23rd, 8:30 a.m.
Great. And I, let me check my calendar. I think maybe the Chuck will be representing the Water Authority on May 23rd, yeah.
In the morning, 8:30.
Yeah. Chuck De La Salle, I believe, will be representing the Water Authority at that meeting. I will not be in the state.
Oh, okay.
But if Arlene, if you could double check with Mayor De La Salle to confirm that he
I
was
will.
Able to attend.
I will check.
Right. And we've already agreed that you'll, prior to the meeting, make sure. currently it is on my schedule to be here. But I just want to make sure there's nothing else on the calendar that's not on my phone.
Any other suggestions for future agenda items? Anything coming forward? Yeah, I'll open to the public. It's a public hearing. I'll Michael, go ahead.
Just in the area of how this project runs into the development of landfill generated electricity. And I think something that should be discussed is that that landfill methane to generate electricity for the Monterey Peninsula should go to displacing currently existing demands that are inappropriately generated. It should not be reserved for a pipe dream that, you know, of a new source of energy that has not had its necessity even found by the Public Utilities Commission. So that, anyway, that idea of where that energy should go should be, you know, on the agenda for further discussion.
Thank you, Michael, for those comments. Anyone else wishing to suggest items for future agendas? Seeing none, I will close the public comment. In fact, the progress on negotiating terms for purchase of landfill gas generated electricity is normally on the agenda. I ask that it be taken off just this agenda so that we could focus on the two substantive items here. But we will have that on subsequent agendas as appropriate. I appreciate the reminder, Michael. If there's no other items from Cal-Am that are coming forward?
Nope.
Very good. Meeting adjourned. Thank you. He's available. Jim can grab that Water Authority. I mean, I don't think he can technically vote, but he can still speak.
Okay.
That would be fine. Thanks, Erling.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that would do it.
So, I'll just imagine.